live from the Third Coast. It is our time to focus on where genealogy and spirit connect. A time to focus on our connection with ourselves and our past. Here's your host, Susan E. King.
Tuesday, and a very exciting day with our guest, Michelle Corinne. She's been with us three times and is probably one of the leading astrologers and someone very, very involved in the changes that I think we as people in this world are going to experience in the next several years. So we got a very exciting show about her trip to Peru, a very exciting discussion, I think, about what to expect for 2011. And Michelle, welcome again.
Thank you, Susan. I'm always so excited to be on your show, so thank you for having me again.
Well, we always enjoy having you because you have so many enlightening things to say. And I'm sure I didn't mention your book, Astrology for Enlightenment, but you can reach Michelle, and I'm just going to give out your website so that people can look you up while we're talking, perhaps. And it's www.michellecarren.com. So where do we want to start? Do we want to start? Let's start with the past. Let's start about your trip to Peru, because that is something I've been following, and I think it's just really probably was pretty fantastic.
Yes, it was. And there were two trips. I've actually, the past 7 months, I've been in and out of the jungle in South America. And I've been in the Andes in Peru in the temples and doing some very sacred ceremonies with the Kero master shamans. And I myself am trained with them. And I want to dispel also a misconception that a lot of people have, because they associate Peru with ayahuasca, this sacred plant for the Peruvians. And this is not used by the descendants of the Incas, the Kero master shamans. This is used by the sorcerers in the jungle and usually quite misused by people, you know, Westerners who go there and think they're going to have an enlightening experience. And some do, because it is a sacred plant, but some don't, you know, have very difficult journeys with that. And the Kero master shamans do not believe in the use of plants to alter our consciousness. We can do that through meditation. We can do that through working on ourselves in very specific ways with our power animals and with nature and rocks and things that are very simple around us and that make nature very alive. So there is no need for this. So all they do is chew coca leaves, but coca leaves don't alter your consciousness. They just help you deal with altitude, and they help you deal also with hunger and the demands of trekking up the temples, because, I mean, you have to be in pretty good shape to go to Peru if you want to walk up the temples, because most of them are are perched very high in the mountains. And there is no road really to drive up there. And Peru to me is one of the most magical lands, because you can still feel the presence of the Incas everywhere. So it's not just Machu Picchu or Huayna Picchu or the Moray Temple or the various temples there are. There's also the glaciers, Aslangati. There's all the sacred valley, of course, with all the temples there, like Ollantaytambo and all those places. But the land itself, everywhere, is absolutely imbued with the power of the Incas. And the ceremonies that we do with the Kero master shamans are always very pure and very beautiful. And it's almost like practical magic. You know, they put a beautiful cloth on the floor next to a temple or in a temple, because some temples are not close to the Kero master shamans, like Machu Picchu. Unfortunately, they're not allowed to do ceremonies there anymore. And then they pull out of their bag. They have this huge bag that they carry with them at all times that contains their mesa, which is their portable altar, which is a cloth that encloses their stones, the sacred stones that they have worked with and that have healing powers. And these are not gemstones. These are regular stones that you just pick up in the mountain. And then they pull out of their bag, you know, all sorts of things that are symbolic of different aspects of our lives. So they pull out, you know, the masculine and the divine feminine, which are two little statues. And then they pull out, you know, those two beautiful goblets made of wood that contained, you know, the feminine and the masculine, the water and the masculine. And they also can have little things like, you know, what we throw at parties to represent joy, and cotton that represents the clouds, and all sorts of biscuits that represent food and abundance, etc. And then they create a whole ceremony based on, and that they put all those elements on this cloth, and they connect to the group or to whoever is there. And they start to create this beautiful ceremony that takes usually an hour, 2 hours, depending. And at the end, you know, depending on what they feel in you, they will give you a rite. And the rite connects you to specific powers within you, awakens specific powers within you, makes you remember who you are in your divinity. And it's amazing the transformation that happens within after such a ceremony, that after that changes your external reality. Because that's the basis of shamanism, is that as we change ourselves, then what we perceive and what is around us cannot stay the same. And that's how we know that we have truly changed, when our environment transforms.
You know, that's really interesting, because, you know, I don't know about the rest of the listeners, but I know the people around me, including myself, are, you know, really feeling a need to reconnect with, I guess, the divine spirit within ourselves. And I see this with a lot of my clients, too, Michelle. I just got an email this morning from one who I've been working with that, you know, as we seem to begin connecting her family, that she's beginning to feel a sense of relief. And, you know, there's a whole lot more that's going on in our environment and our world today about letting go, I think, and the sense of relief that we get by letting go, that even the not knowing about some of our ancestors and our ancestors' past, for example, you know, sticks with us all our lives. And we sometimes have to not only get rid of the physical things that are encumbering us in this lifetime, but we have to also release some of these things that we kind of inherited one way or the other.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love, Susan, the work you do, and I think it's extremely important, because we need to know where we're coming from in order to be able to heal, first of all, our family tree and everything that happened before us that is still within us. But there is an even greater ancestry, which is our Mother Earth. And for the Keros, for example, nature is paramount. This is our true mother. It's not our biological mother and father. Our mother is the earth, who nurtures us, who is our home. And our father is the sky and the Apus. And the Apus in Quechua, the sacred divine language, is are the mountains. So this is really a time where we need to reconnect with nature. And I'm very excited, actually, to be offering another trip to Peru, where we are going to be going to those temples and meeting with the Quero master shamans. My boyfriend and I became the part of the family of, because they asked us to be the godmother and the godfather of two children, two Quero children, which is a huge honor. So we have access to places that are normally not common places for tourists to go to. And we have access to very high shamans who are very amazing beings and that you can't just go and hire, you know. I mean, in Peru, nothing works like that. It's like the shamans show up if you're ready for them and if they feel that it is the right time for you. But it's very difficult to make appointments with anybody because they live in sacred time. And in sacred time, you just feel if something is right and if it's the right timing for it for all sorts of various reasons, then things happen. So usually nothing happens according to plan in Peru, but it's always perfect. It's always absolutely perfect, and everybody comes out of Peru transformed. So I haven't had time to update my website on the Peru trip, the upcoming Peru trip, but I promise it will be done by the end of November. And the reason why was because I was in another very sacred place, in Colombia, and there I was in the jungle, and pretty much for the last, in and out for the past 7 months. And there I lived with the indigenous Arhuacos, who are the descendants of the Taironas, who disappeared like, the Mayans and the Incas, but remain in their descendants. And there are several descendant tribes, the Kogis, the Arhuacos, the Wayus, the Wiwas. And these are these are people who are extremely close to nature, so much so that they have forbidden little brother, also known as us, to come to the Sierra Nevada of Santa Marta. And this is a very sacred, huge mountain range that's in the north of Colombia, about 900 miles from, 900 kilometers, sorry, from Bogota, the capital, and it is on the northern part of Colombia on the Atlantic Ocean. And this Sierra Nevada of Santa Marta is a place that contains all the climates of planet Earth. And it extends all the way from the glaciers to the ocean. And the Arhuacos have been assigned, there's a legend that they have that assigned them from the beginning of time, the protection of the earth. And this place, the Sierra Nevada Santa Marta, is called El Corazón del Mundo, the heart of the world. And this is a place that's absolutely extraordinary because nothing, contrarily to Peru, where there's lots of tourists and tons of temples, there is no temple. Nothing was ever built there, except for one place called the Lost City, but nothing was built. Although there were also a lot of gold artifacts, and they found a lot of incredible, beautiful objects that are in El Museo del Oro in Bogota, which is an incredible museum with the most incredible collection of gold artifacts. And this is a place that they consider themselves the elder brothers, and they consider themselves the keepers of the wisdom of the earth. And they do not allow any tourists in the Sierra Nevada because they feel that our thoughts pollute the beauty and the majesty of nature in that place. And it is true that when you go there, you are stricken, because I was lucky enough to be able to walk in the jungle completely on my own for several hours. And you feel the jungle talks to you. You feel the trees. There's those immense 100-year-old trees that extend all the way to the sky, and you can't even see the sky because you're in the jungle. It's super, super hot. It's super, super humid. There's all sorts of mosquitoes and tarantulas and deadly snakes and the works. But you feel that your mind completely empties in the face of so much beauty and so much magic. And it's a place where the rivers are pristine, are absolutely crystal clear. Their waters come from the glaciers. And when you bathe in those rivers, you feel like the whole, everything is being washed out of you. Every thought, every darkness, every fear, every doubt, every negativity, whatever it is that you have, just gets cleared. And the elders of the elder brothers are called the Mamos, and they are like the spiritual leaders, the shamans of the community. And nothing is done without asking permission to the Mamos. And the Mamos are only speak Arhuaco, they don't speak any Spanish. And they never come down unless, they never come in our world. They always stay in the Sierra Nevada, and they overlook absolutely everything. And we were blessed to have a few ceremonies with the Mamos, and there it's completely different from the ceremonies with the Queros in Peru, which are very colorful and very, it take a long time. The ceremony with the Mamos is very sober, very fast, and depends. It completely depends on what they feel in you again. And they will, you know, do a prayer on those little white threads for each person and tie it on your wrists and on both your wrists. And you're supposed to keep them until they fall off naturally. And in one ceremony, after that, they asked us to just go in the river and jump in the river and immerse ourselves completely in the river. Well, the shaman was doing the poporo next to the river on the rock. And a poporo is like a shell. It's actually a fruit that's been, you know, it's like a sort of rattle. And they put inside these crushed shells and coca paste, and they have this stick, and it represents the masculine, the balance of the masculine and the feminine. And only the men do that, and they have to be initiated at the age of 15 for 4 days and four nights without sleeping to become worthy of the poporo. And that induces a state of calm consciousness in them and heightened dreams. So they dream awake. And sometimes they will sit by the fire for days on end and never sleep for several days, just doing the poporo. And they are always dressed in white. They never use another color. The women have beautiful colored beads that represent the rays, the different rays, and have meanings. The different colors have different meanings. And the men are, but everybody is dressed only in white. And they have, the men have these very high hats that are like, that represents the responsibilities of a married man, and that are also symbolic of the glaciers. So it was an incredible experience to actually live with them, because they don't live in villages. That's another particularity they have. They live in isolated houses. They have no furniture. They sleep on the floor. But there is a happiness in the children that I have never seen anywhere. There is a joy and an intelligence and a clarity in those children that was absolutely incredible. And it's really a place that makes you reevaluate everything about our lives, because in the end, you know, we have all those comforts. We have beds, we have water, hot water, we have showers, we have everything, all the comforts of modern society. And in the end, we are so enslaved by running after money. We are so enslaved by the demands of this society we have built that has become so artificial, that has separated us from Mother Earth, from nature, from speaking with the animals, from connecting with the plants, that we forget what is really important. And to me, it was so humbling and so sobering to be close to those people, to live with them, to walk with them, to eat with them, to work with them, because you realize who you really are and what is truly essential. And coming into 2011, 2010 was a brutal year on very many levels, because we had to shift very, very fast, and it happened very suddenly with the Year of the Tiger. But in 2011, we're going to reap the rewards of everything that shifted in 2010. So 2010, just to give a very, very fast overview so that we
sure.
know where
I think
we
we've
are.
All felt it, and I think that some of the things that you brought out in your discussion about these trips is really the direction that we all need to be looking, and that is a little bit more connected with nature and to ourselves.
Absolutely. And you know, there's a very there's a beautiful book I'm reading right now, the Ringing Cedars series, and which was inspired by Anastasia, this young recluse who lives in Siberia with almost no clothes, in complete harmony with animals and plants. And this book, these series of books are so incredible because she talks very clearly about the things we need to do. And one very simple thing that I've started to do and that really works is at night before you go to sleep, just wash your feet, you know, in a little bucket of water and with no soap, no shampoo, nothing. And then pour that water that you bathed and washed your feet in on a plant. Any plant. So I chose in my little backyard a rosemary bush. And then that plant is going to get all the information about you, your body, where you're at, who you are, what you need. And that plant is going to become your sacred healing plant. And you need to talk to it every day, you know, say hello to it in the morning and good night to it at night. Caress it, touch it, and that plant is then going to become your healing plant. So I'm making tea every day with that special rosemary plant, and it's amazing what happens. It's just a very simple little thing that takes 2 minutes a day, and that we can do even in an apartment. We don't need to have a backyard to do that, and the difference is immense, because right there in our living room, we are connecting with Mother Earth, even if it's in the form of a potted plant that's sitting on a table.
So that's really interesting. I'm going to try that. I'm into trying anything these days.
That's good.
Yeah, and especially reconnecting, because you know what you described is, you know, such a dichotomy to the way we live. And, you know, trying for most of us to find a medium, happy medium, between the experience that you described and these lives that we lead that are in an environment that is not paying attention to a lot of things, I think is really a direction. And I'm just curious, other than that, I mean, are there any other types of things that we as people in this time and age need to be doing to try to recenter ourselves a little bit more towards our own divinity, I guess, is really what I'm aiming at, is to be able to be more in touch with ourselves and more in touch with our environment as it should be rather than the way it is.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad you brought that up, Susan. One very simple thing we can do is with water. Water is so important. And what we can do is have jars of water in a different colored glass. So, you know, of all the colors of the chakras, so red, orange, yellow, green, purple, blue. And write affirmations or words of beauty and magic and empowerment on those jars. So what I did is that I just printed it out of my computer and just scotch taped it on the jar. And so every day you drink love, you drink gratitude, you drink power, you drink you know, infinite wealth. You drink harmony, balance, health, air, beauty, anything that you feel you need to bring into your life. Have jars with all those words and just drink and let the water sit there for at least 15 minutes and then drink that water. And that water will put those elements of harmony and peace and beauty and magic inside you and will nourish your cells. It's not just going to quench your thirst. It's going to nourish your cells. It's going to bring you back to your divinity. So that's one very simple thing we can do. And there's many others, like eating as close to nature as possible, you know, avoiding all the processed foods, definitely avoiding microwaves, because microwaves literally kill the cells and the memory and water in the water contained in the foods that we eat, and is utterly destructive to both our bodies and our psyche. And maybe avoid watching too much television also. You know, it's a time where we get a lot of information, but also a lot of disinformation from television. And at night, especially at night before going to sleep, we should put ourselves in the place of being in a sanctuary. We should play, you know, either meditate or breathe or do some yoga or, you know, read some inspiring books or create an atmosphere of peace before going into the dream world. Because shaman societies insist a lot on dreams and how important dreams are and how they replenish us. And if we watch violent movies or, you know, and put all those horrible images in our head before going to sleep, then that is not going to help us access easily places of empowerment and magic. So these are very, very simple things we can do. And it's important to eat organic foods. It's important to eat them as nature intended them. So the grapefruit as it comes off the tree, the avocado as it comes off the tree, and do as little cooking and as little preparation as we can, and using only natural ingredients. That's very, very important.
That is an area where I think I may have a lot of trouble.
Well, I think we have a lot of conditioning, you know. And it's funny because I was driving recently back from California with a friend of mine who is trying to lose weight and trying to look at every possible way she can do it. And she said to me, she said, you know, Michelle, I noticed that when you don't find foods that you want to eat, you just don't eat. And I had never noticed that, and she was right. She was, I would rather not eat than put junk in my body, that's for sure. So, you know, sometimes you stop at a gas station, you look around, and there's pretty much nothing you can eat there.
Right.
Because it's all junk food. And so that's it. You just skip a meal, you know, and you're not going to die from that. But you might die from putting, you know, poison in your body. So, and we need to remember, you know, Susan, in this process of ascension, our body is our temple. It's through our body that we are receiving the rays of the sun, that we're receiving the air and the smells and the perfumes and everything that surrounds us. So our body is super, super important at this point in time. And, you know, and avoiding, obviously, the poisons of tobacco and alcohol is definitely also a great help because that will help us detoxify and just feel clearer, you know, in our approach to life.
I want to go ahead, if you don't mind, I'm going to open up the phone lines while we continue to talk. If anybody has any questions for Michelle, the toll-free number is 888-815-9756. And so let's talk a little bit more about 2011 and going into 2012. I believe you mentioned a little bit that the 2010 was kind of a very awkward year for many people, and I believe the summer seemed to be traumatic for many.
Yeah. Well, we had a lot of cosmic events that happened simultaneously, but the most important that happened in 2010 was this opposition of Saturn with Jupiter that really brought a need to go from the old to the new. And this was really a time of, you know, a lot of difficulty in involving important relationships in our lives, personal and professional. There could have been legal difficulties. There could have been a lot of conflicts between family members or between our, you know, private life and our professional obligations. There could have been also a lot of confusion regarding ethical and moral issues. And this was a time to really reestablish what our values are, what is important, what do we stand for, what are our goals, and how do we generate more ethics in our lives, because ethics are so important. We are in a cycle of ethics, and we need to be absolutely honest, both with ourselves and with others, in order to create this new reality that will emerge by 2012, that is already emerging left and right. I mean, I believe the work you're doing, the show you're offering, are all are contributing to this new society, to a world that is full of peace and love and harmony, and not full of war and deceit and corruption like what we have known until now.
And so, greed.
And greed. Greed is horrible. Greed is the worst. You know, it's interesting because when you live with the Arhuacos, they have nothing. They have no money. They have no houses, really. I mean, they have some huts, but they really live on the floor and sleep wherever they are. And they're happy. There is no money there. So they have started to receive money from non-government organizations and also the Colombian government in order to buy back their land to get access to the sea, which is their need to fulfill the prophecy, because they say that if they don't have a stretch of land going from the glaciers all the way to the ocean, the whole world is going to perish, because they're not going to be able to perform ceremonies both at the glaciers and on the beach. And this is very important for the survival of the whole world. So, you know, you may want to look at our trailer at elderbrothersmovie.com, because it will give you the visuals of how they dress and where they live and what their plight is about, which is very intense, you know, and concerns all of us. So another major thing that happened in 2010 was this Jupiter squaring Pluto. And that can give rise to a lot of fanatism that could also affect organizations, big organizations, and really question the methods with which people are creating what they are creating. So this is a time where people could have been very either overbearing, very aggressive, and a little intolerant in seeing other people's viewpoint. So this is a time where we could have, you know, some people may have felt that the end justified the means, which is never true. But this was a year to learn patience, and this is a year to simplify our lives and letting go of a lot of things that had held us in slavery and that in the end do we really need. It was really a year of figuring out what we wanted, where we were going, and a year of also surprising coming together with people who had maybe been at the fringe of our lives but all of a sudden became very central to our lives, and other people dissolving altogether. And it could have been very surprising, the rearrangement of who stayed and who left and who came in and how, you know, the reshuffling of our social life in major ways. But this is also a time where I believe we became collectively very aware of how our thoughts, how our actions are affecting the whole, because we are all interconnected. So this is not like, oh, let me do this and to hell with everybody else. That's not true. Everything we do, everything we think, everything we create affects everybody on the planet. And that is so exciting to realize that we all have such an incredible power to shift the consciousness of all. And it doesn't take necessarily a huge amount of people waking up, but it takes enough people who wake up and act on what they see and what they feel to shift the global consciousness. And then we are in this, just in the last days of this Venus retrograde that started in October 8 until November 18, and that is in Scorpio. And last time this exact same retrograde happened in the same sign was in November of 2002. And we need to remember where we were emotionally at that time, what was going on for us financially also at that time, because Venus represents both love and money, and see that, you know, now is like the higher octave of what happened in November of 2002, or can be a reminiscence and can be a chance to shift what may have gone wrong at that time and transmute it to a whole different level. So this is a time where there could have been some financial surprises, you know, good or bad. There could have been also shifts in relationships. This is a time where people we hadn't heard from in a long time, or, you know, never really knew the existence of, could have showed up and been very important in what was going on for us. This is a time where we could have been also coming up with new lucrative ideas and shifting, because it's a time where we shouldn't go against the flow. And if something repeatedly is not working out for us, whether it's a business endeavor or relationship or something, it's important to let go, and it's important to shift and look around at other possibilities. And chances are we are just being rerouted and protected by those things that are blocking the flow.
It's I call it getting nudged. But because I've had a lot of this going on, and it's very interesting that you're mentioning it, because I had a direction, and I know I'm not the only one, so I'm only expressing this because I'm sure there are a lot of the listeners out there that probably are going through some of the same things. Had a direction, made some progress, totally got unfocused for a few months, got nudged, you know, wake-up calls, strange wake-up calls. And
don't you love that? Whoa.
You know, the good thing is they weren't insurmountable, as some of us have had wake-up calls before, you know, the really serious wake-up calls. Yeah, these were little aggravating wake-up calls, you know, that, you know, makes us stop in our tracks if we're aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
And so, wait a minute, what am I doing? What was I doing? This was not where I wanted to go. This is not my intention. And, you know, really having to take a couple more steps backwards to refocus on where before 2010 we thought we were going.
Because things are going
very fast. Is that basically what you're saying this time frame was?
And you know what, Susan, I love that you say that, because it's a time where everything is going so fast that if we take the wrong turn, all of a sudden we wake up and we're like, where am I? What's going on? How did I land here? But and you're right. And this is a time where, because everything is going so fast, we have to be very, very, very clear on what choices we make. Very clear whom we hang out with and what books we read and what films we watch, you know? And there was something extraordinary that happened in 2010 that I think is worth mentioning, is that Saturn entered Libra in October. It started in July, but it really got there in October of 2010, and is going to be there until October of 2012. No, sorry, it started not in, it started in July of 2010 and it will last until October of 2012.
Wow.
And Saturn in Libra, so this is a 2 year of finding our spirit partner. This is a year where, the 2 years where a lot of people who've been single, who've been having a lot of relationship issues and never seeming to find the right person, will be creating some very beautiful spiritual relationships in the next 2 years. Because now we are not in the time of codependency and, you know, fighting and having relationships that do not serve a higher purpose. So I'm not saying that when you meet your spirit partner, it's all pink and perfect. You know, that's not true at all. There could be some very bitter fights. There could be some very intense confrontations. But they are all there to help you let go of your ego, to help you. And when I say let go of your ego, I think ego is not bad at all. That's not my what I'm saying. We need a healthy dose of ego, you know, otherwise it would be very difficult to survive. But it becomes a problem when it's about the arrogant ego, about the ego who thinks that I'm better than the others, which is never true. So it is, but it is relationships that help us become more who we truly are, that rectify certain things of our conditioning that we took for granted or never questioned and that really are not our truth. So these are the relationships of the next 2 years until 2012. And through those relationships, amazing children of light are going to come through. And the children who are being born now, most of them are unbelievable. I mean, I have all those little 6-year-old, 8-year-old, 11-year-old friends, and they're like, they blow me away. They're just like so clear and so focused and so full of happiness and joy. And they know. They just know. They look at you and they know who you are. And they're the ones who are asking their parents to stop fighting. They're the ones who are asking people to stop doing drugs and eating things that don't help them. And these children are masters, truly.
You know, really pretty awesome what's going on. And, I mean, I feel it, and I've been feeling it for several years, actually. But I also, you know, can look into some of these, the eyes of some of these children, and it's just, it is amazing. And I don't know how to, and I don't want this to come out sounding really wrong, but you know, we have these pets of ours. You have a cat, I think.
Yes.
I have two dogs.
Yes.
And these they've got these incredible spirits that are so true. And not to say that, you know, that's what I see in the kids today too, is they've got truth of spirit. And how we lost it, I don't know, because we all had it at one point in our lives, and somehow we, you know, it disappeared. And I think so many of us are trying to get back into, you know, this whole sense of spirit and sense of being, and getting out of this sense of greed and having to have it all and having to keep up with the Joneses and having all these things that really at the end of the day, while they're creature comforts, what do they really offer us?
I'm so glad you're saying that, Susan, and that you're mentioning our pets, because as you said, I have a very, very special cat, Raphael, who is actually, as we speak, in the Sphinx position meditating and supporting my show. if you go to my website, michellekaren.com, there is a whole story on Raphael there with pictures. And Raphael goes with me everywhere. We travel the world together, so we're famous in pretty much every airport. He always travels in a cabin with me, and he goes to all the conferences. And one day I was in Germany, and he was walking around, you know, making friends and working the energy and creating a whole grid there. And I'm in front of 300 people, and I'm talking about, you know, the pets and how they are ascended masters and how they are assisting our healing in incredible ways. And Raphael jumps on the table, faces the audience, and goes in this whole speech of mew, 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 mew. And everybody's jaw dropped, including mine. And he was like, well, he's a Leo, so he likes the attention. But he was like, he has definitely a healthy, strong ego. And this cat is very clear on who he is, what his work is about. And he's doing it beautifully. And everywhere we go, he connects with everybody. And I suspect people invite me again because of him. They always ask me, are you coming with your cat? So he has friends all over the world. And this little being who just speaks cat language but has such a presence, everybody falls in love with him, and everybody looks in his eyes and recognizes that this is an ascended master. There's no doubt about it in anybody's mind. Even people who don't like cats, even people who never looked at a cat in their life, they just shift around him. And that's the magic of our pets. That's the magic of the plants even around us. You know, if you start doing what Anastasia says of washing your feet and putting them on a plant and caressing the plant and talking to the plant, that plant will start talking back to you, guaranteed. And I may sound a little strange by saying that, but do try and you'll see something will happen. Now your listeners are going to think I'm wacko, which maybe I am, but you know what? I think it's a time where we need to be a little crazy. We need to open the space and realize that our life is so much greater than what we thought it was, and we are so much more powerful than what we think. And Yawako's kept telling me that. And little brother does not know how powerful he is, and it's true. We don't. And if we could focus our thoughts on positive endeavors, on positive thoughts, on love, on gratitude, it's so important to have gratitude. And I suggest we start all a gratitude journal and every day write 5 things you're grateful about. And it can be as simple as the sun rising every morning. It could be as simple as taking a hot shower every morning. It could be as simple as having a good mattress and a nice bed to sleep in at night. And food on our table, and clouds in the sky, and sunshine, and, you know, simple things, but what are we grateful for? And once we start focusing on what we're grateful for, we're going to manifest more and more abundance in our lives. And this is what 2011 is really about. What was difficult in 2010 is going to reap incredible rewards in 2011. And it's, you know, we were in the year of the tiger, which is a very brutal, dramatic year of fast and dramatic changes. The year of the rabbit in Chinese astrology for 2011 is a much softer year. It's a year of much more peace and serenity. And we have this beautiful Jupiter training Pluto in 2011. And this is a time where there will be definitely a huge collective interest in social reform and helping each other live a more spiritually vibrant, constructive life. This is a time where we will become much more aware and conscious of the deeper underlying spiritual forces of life. And we could have some very strong, intuitive, clairvoyant, psychic experiences. This is a time where our faith and our understanding of universal spiritual laws is going to be greatly, greatly enhanced. And it will give us a lot of courage and confidence to regenerate everything in our lives and everything around us. So it's a year also where there should be a lot of positive developments and benefits that could happen through even insurances or, you know, money that's involved in some corporate things, because there is such a cleansing of all of that. It's a great time where our family, our domestic circumstances will also improve. And in June of 2011 until June of 2012, Jupiter is going to be in Taurus. And I absolutely believe that this will be a time of finally starting to see the signs of financial prosperity again. And as we are really connected to Mother Earth, because Taurus is the sacredness of Mother Earth, the sacredness of our planet and our home, we are going to really start creating, you know, much better lives for ourselves that are not spent in using money for pointless or meaningless endeavors, but are really there to help us connect more. So I wouldn't be surprised if people started buying land and creating little gardens, growing their own food, their own plants, their own vegetables, their own fruit, and appreciating this process of working with the land. And that we can do simply even without buying land, you know, just by sprouting in our kitchen, you know, getting dry seeds and using empty jars and just a little cheesecloth and a rubber band, and just with a little bit of water and the side of a sink, you know, a dish rack, we can plant in our own kitchen with no space whatsoever very delicious, nutritious foods that we can put in our salads and eat that will really nourish our soul.
So what do we need to do as people to really, I mean, you've told us a lot, to really prepare ourselves for making these next years, you know, more powerful for each of us as individuals, so that, you know, I think that first understanding what your purpose is or what you believe your purpose is, and to be able to follow your purpose and follow your dream, and to be of service. I think being of service is of real importance.
I agree.
In the coming years. You know, what can we do to really prepare ourselves over this next month you know, we're very quickly reaching December and the holidays, and where we, you know, in the holidays we sometimes connect with family and sometimes we lose sight of a lot of things because of the commercialism of what the holiday season has become.
I'm glad, Susan, that you mentioned the word follow our hearts, because that, I believe, is the most important thing. We need to follow our bliss. We need to follow our joy. We need to do things we love to do. And I know a lot of people are very scared of losing their jobs, are caught up in professional circumstances that they hate and that doesn't enhance their lives in any way except give them, you know, money to keep paying their mortgage and buying food to put on their tables. But in the end, there's always another way. You know, we don't need to be enslaved by circumstances that are limiting or limited. We need to find where is our heart. And the same with people. I know, you know, the family situation, you know, it's the Christmas, it's Thanksgiving, and we do need to, you know, honor our family. It's very important. But at the same time, we can honor them by spending really quality time with them and, you know, bending to their level without getting caught in the games and the manipulations and the negativity, and being there with them, but in a very loving way, and spreading the light, you know, without necessarily talking about anything that's of importance, but just by having gratitude and seeing them as a human being who's trying the best they can, and maybe they're not doing very well, but they try the best they can. And just sharing happy thoughts, because our thoughts are very important. Our emotions are very important. Every time we get angry, we weaken ourselves. Every time we get negative or we start having doubt, we weaken ourselves. And I know that in the current economic situation, a lot of people are falling prey to the collective subconscious of we don't have enough and we can't spend. But you know what? My theory, which I've always used in my life and which has always worked, is that when I'm afraid of not having money, or I'm afraid that, oh, that's it, I'm at my last $100, I spend it. But I spend it with trust. And when I do that, money always comes in. It's incredible. It's like a law I've created for myself. and the normal thing would be, oh my gosh, that's your last $100. Just keep it. Hold on to it. You never know. And we need to live in the moment. And my theory is always that when I need something, or I like something, or I enjoy something, I buy it. And somehow the money will show up right after I've taken that leap of faith and gotten in that trust of just trusting, you know, that money will come. And money does come. Money is an energy. And we need to remember that money doesn't come from a person or a job. It comes directly from the divine. And once we understand that, it changes the paradigm completely. And of course, if a lot of people start to give power to a negative or scarcity or a difficult financial situation, of course it's going to create more of it. But if we start to give our trust and our power to abundance in our lives, and we start looking at everything we have in our houses, and we start using everything, the clothes we never wore, the books we never read, or if really we have outgrown all that, give it, you know, sell it, transmit it, make it move so that more space can happen for new things to come in that feed our soul, that help us find more happiness within ourselves.
Michelle, we have run out of time, believe it or not.
Oh, dear.
I can't believe it. I mean, it's just been a very quick hour.
Oh, my gosh. We didn't even
know. I know. But in any event, you can reach Michelle at www.michellekaren.com. Thanks again. We're going to see you next year, right?
Oh, I hope so. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. We'll see everybody next week.
You have been listening to Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect with Susan E. King. Each week we will focus on the spiritual journey of connecting ourselves with our ancestors. Join us every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific right here on BBS Radio. For upcoming show information, you can visit Susan's website at www.susaneking.com.